everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Stem Premier Land podcast. I'm your host, Ollie Fisher, joined once again by Anthony Talgreed.
Good morning. I'm here.
I'm Maddie.
I'll wait another 15 minutes to say my first word, so.
Thank you to everyone in the comments for letting us know that Maddie was mute for 18 minutes. Those of you who were audio listening, there wasn't a problem with his microphone. It's just the after effects of having an ill family. Isn't that right?
Yeah, it's exhausting.
Yeah. Anyway, we're all here. We're all ready to go. It's a Monday. It's a new week. We've got a game to recap. We've got two games to preview. We're getting towards that two game a week type shit. Well, it's not shit. You know, it's some pretty interesting stuff coming up. But yeah, before we dive into this week's episode, thank you, as always, to our Substack founding members. Carlo Fassi, Rajat, Raul Escobar, Luke Villano, Mats, MJ, Kemin, Joey Gawler, Moritz Paulman, Tito, Mike, Ali Torino, Des Windsor, McGlynn.
Read it backwards.
Flip the order there. Just, you know, to be a bit different. We really appreciate your support. And we did a little bit of a longer look at the Substack, sort of what you can expect over there last week. So I would encourage you, if you didn't watch that, to go back and there was like an overlay on screen of the different things that you get in a weekly cycle on Substack. But this week, I just want to divert everybody to the main thing. Isaac has done a very, very good in-depth article which analyzes Milan's financial accounts in line with what we're expected to make revenue-wise this year. And we, from that, get a ballpark figure of what Milan's summer transfer budget should be. I'm not going to reveal what it is here. Go and check it out. You can try a week for free over on the Substack. But yeah, it explains exactly why a budget can be so fluid. But we have come to a rough estimate of what Milan might be able to spend this summer. So go and check that out. The bonus podcast last week, we spoke about the rumours that have come out that Pioli is expected to keep his job beyond the end of the season. Which leads us nicely into the first game that we've got to talk about, Lecce at home. We predicted a comfortable W, I think, on the
we did a draw.
I think I hit it spot on. I think I said 3-0, didn't I?
You said 3-0, I said 2-0. Maddie said a draw.
Yeah.
I can understand why Maddie went with a draw, but we took care of business. Is the thing going on? Is the little Lecce review thing at the bottom there?
My bad.
It's a Monday. It's a small case, but we move. We move. So yeah, this was a bit of an interesting build up to the game. The main reason being Loftus-Cheek was out due to suspension, as we knew, and we just presumed that one of the midfielders would be moved forward. Then, like 24 hours before the game, it became apparent that he was just going to stick Pulisic in the number 10 role. It's a role that he has played before, but I wouldn't say it's his primary position as much as some people try to claim that it is. And I guess 5 minutes in, it worked. Picked up the ball in the central area, put it onto his left foot. Lovely shot inside the left post. That was a lovely start to the game. Just calms everything down a little bit.
Yeah, it was pretty nice. Also, Chukwueze had the assist on that. It was a fantastic run. So props to him. It looked really lively. It looks like he's finally finding the form that a lot of people expected he would have this summer. You know, I know I was very critical of him in the start of the season, but he's finally coming good a little late, but you know, we're there. And it was a nice first goal, and second goal came very quickly after. I think it was 4 minutes later, something like that.
No, the first goal was 5th minute and the second goal was 20th minute, but it did feel like they were close together.
It felt really, really quick. Adley took a corner, and I to this day have not seen an angle where it actually touches Giroud's head. I swear it was an Adley Olympico, but I think if everyone says it's Giroud's, right? I'm not going to argue with it. A goal is a goal, but it was very odd when I watched it. I was like, did that touch anyone at all? Like, it just went in. Mm. So yeah, 2-0 up and we're coasting. And then the memory sets in of the last time we were 2-0 up against Lecce. And I'm thinking, oh no, we need a third. We really need a third. And it didn't come until late. It came in the second half, right? We actually got to halftime 2-0 up again, and we didn't blow it. Was there anything else in the first half? I feel like there was. Oh, they got a red
card.
Yeah.
That was GBH. I'll give it to Maddie.
Dog, you give me the one thing I don't remember under the three goals.
All right, I'll do red card, and then you can just talk about whatever you want to talk about. So basically,
of the attack finally clicking, and AJ just goes off on all of it. I was like, motherfucker.
Maddie, you do attack clicking. Go for it now while it's in your head.
No, go on the red card, man. Let's go in order.
What a shit show.
What we're progressing talking about.
Okay, right. So ball comes
in. I'll
just
sit here quietly.
As
respecting
normal.
You guys.
As he's interrupted us.
Ball comes in. It's about chest high. Chukwueze goes to control it on the edge of the Milan box. Krstović, their centre forward, decides that he's going to try and bring it down. Studs up. At chest high, he does not connect with the ball. He does connect with Chukwueze's shoulder. Look, it wasn't like a straight up clothesline or anything like that, but there was enough contact and it was a very reckless thing to do. The referee called it a straight red on the field. You sometimes don't see that with studs up stuff. They prefer to wait for the prompt from VAR, but no arguments there. It was quite funny because for the third goal then, there was a bit of controversy about it. Because there was contact between Teo and their player in the box. They wanted a penalty. And then as Teo's going to retrieve the ball, he knees their player in the head by accident. You know, it's by accident. He's making a genuine play for the ball. So he's down with a head injury. And, you know, then Milan go on and score. Because of the red card incident and because of the way that goal happened, Lecce's like CEO and their owner,
the chairman,
just got up, started sarcastically applauding from the stands, and then stormed out. They'd seen enough. I thought that was pretty funny. They were like laughing as they were doing it, but
feel kind of bad for that one because, like, I don't think the initial challenge from Teo was a foul, it was shoulder to shoulder.
Oh, do it, yeah. I thought it was
the knee was, I mean, you can't do that, you know, intentional or not. No. It's not like Krstović. Yeah,
it's a dangerous play.
It's not like Krstović intended to studs up Chukwueze's arm and he got sent off. Like, if Teo had been punished for that, I wouldn't have been shocked. And I don't think it would have changed the result of the game. But, I mean, I think even Teo was like, is that going to get called? Because he stopped on the ball, you know? He stopped and was looking around a little bit like, nothing? Okay, so, I feel like they were a little hard done on that one. But at the end of the day, like, they lost 3-0. Was it going to change the outcome of the game? Probably not. But it got Liao a really nice goal. Prior to the game, I saw this image. Shirt tucked, ball bouncing on his head. Shorts rolled
Maradona.
Like he's Ronaldinho. Yeah, Maradona, whomever.
That's very 90s.
Yeah, I saw it and I was like,
have you seen the video?
He's going to have one. And he had a great fucking game.
Milan published a video on TikTok of him like doing some ball juggling before the game. And it's been put next to that famous Maradona warm-up when he's with Napoli, and he's just got like...
That's what that was from, yeah.
Yeah, and it's basically identical, you know? Yeah. I mean, we shouldn't be surprised that professional footballers can juggle a ball like that, but it was really cool how he did it.
I mean, have you seen some Barca players when they get announced, they don't know how to juggle a ball?
That was so fun. Who was that? I remember that.
It was someone who they paid a lot of money for.
Yeah.
It was Serginho Dest.
Could be Dest.
Oh, it probably was Dest too, but there was another one who was like a big, big signing. I can't. Was it Griezmann?
Could have been, yeah.
Maybe. It was someone.
There was a big name that they did. It just couldn't even do three. It was like really struggling. Yeah, lovely pass from Adli for the goal as well. That's been likened to a Rui Costa assist for Shevchenko from about 20 years ago. So a lot of nostalgia in this game. Mm-hmm. I thought in the subject of balance, so we can't be accused of being biased. I thought that Lecce had 1.9 penalties from that particular incident. I know people saying shoulder to shoulder on the Teo contact. There was shoulder to shoulder and then he leant in. So that's a penalty for me. And then he kicks him in the head while he's on the floor. Like that. If you say it as it is, yeah, that's not good. It's pretty bad. And as you say, he stopped and he was like, right, I'll just play on then. Just offloads it to Adli. I wonder if he just gave it to Adley to make sure that he wasn't the last person who touched the ball for the assist. Yeah. So then, right, off we go now. But yeah, gorgeous pass, and Liao with the finish. He continues his excellent form. Do you know what? For a 3-0 win, and maybe we sound a bit spoilt here, but for a 3-0 win, this wasn't a particularly brilliant or entertaining game. It just felt very routine to me. The two goals early on kind of killed it a bit. They hit the bar in the first half with that header, which I think could have made things a little bit more interesting, you know, had they half the deficit, or it might have even been equalised at the time. We missed a couple more chances. Pulisic had that header that was well saved, and, you know, there were the usual counter-attacking opportunities in the second half, but I was pleased that this was a nice routine victory. That's exactly what
routine is good.
Yes, exactly.
Right, yeah. Because previously this would have been like a 1-0. They have a red card, and then somehow they get back in it, right? But the team's been clicking. Liao has that chance early on in the season. He misses it. You know, Chukwueze is finally finding his feet. You know, if him and Pulisic can click and he's on the left, right? Right?
There you go.
I'm like, okay, I'm looking at it, but yeah. And we can have Pulisic down the middle. We're going all the way, man.
Honestly, yeah. I thought it was a really, like, look, I know it was asked as a question, like, would we want to try this attacking four as we saw it? And I think we all kind of said no because we didn't have a substitute if we did that, you know? And I still agree with that, but it looked real good. It looked really good. You know, if this is where Pioli wants to go, I'm not going to be mad at him. I don't think he'll stick with it. Loftus Cheek was out because of suspension, not tactical decision. So I think he'll come back unless Pioli just realized, look, we just won 3-0 with this and everyone got on the score sheet in that trident, you know. Chukwueze assist, Pulisic goal, Liao goal. Did Giroud have an assist? Oh, Giroud had a goal. Yeah, I mean, all four of them. Yeah. Got on the fucking score sheet. That's crazy. Like, so how can you argue against that? I will say, there's that too. But we dropped points to Lecce last time. So, yeah.
True.
Jovic had a chance. Yeah, I really thought he was going to score his. He had that sliding little shot and then the rebound he flicked and it was a goal on clearance. I mean, it was a slow moving ball, so it wasn't like that incredible to save, but had a good one there. Reinders looked nice. He had some skill moves and just got fouled. Liao was doing all kinds of pirouettes and flicks and elasticos, and then he eventually just got ripped down too. They just said, we're not beating this guy. Fuck him. Throw him down. That's always a good thing to me. Like, obviously, you want your players to be able to not get fouled and just keep running in when they're doing that, but if the other team's only option is to pull you down, take a yellow card, and give away a free kick in a dangerous area, then so be it, because Teo was on target with that free kick too. Like, there were opportunities. Like you said, yeah, this was routine. It was comfortable. It was 3-0. It could have been 6-0. You know?
Yeah. There were some calls in the chat for, like, you know, let's run up our goal difference and stuff like that. Let's keep... we did try. Like, don't get me wrong. It's not like we stopped trying to score goals. That, you know, the opportunities were there. But... you know, you got half an eye on Thursday, and it was fine. It was commanding. It was never in doubt from about the 20th minute onwards. That's exactly what you want. I can't really grumble with any of the substitutions that Pioli made either. He brought on Kier for Gabbia, knowing that we don't have Tomori on Thursday night, so you get Gabbia a little bit of rest. Musa came on for Pulisic, just added a body to the midfield, and then Jovic for Giroud was obvious. These were all with 30 minutes left as well, so you're keeping a bit of energy in their tanks. And then, Benacer and Terracciano came on.
I'm curious why Liao got a full 90. Like, why didn't Okafor not get any minutes, you know? Maybe just... Yeah. I don't know. I feel like that's like if there's one guy you want to say, okay, game's done, well, let's give our stars rest, Liao's the guy you take off for that, you know? But whatever, it worked out and he didn't get hurt, so can't complain too much.
No, we can't complain. That's it, really. I guess we do tops and flops now.
Yep.
Top for me. I know that one of you two is going to pick Pulisic, I believe. Could be wrong. So I'll go Liao.
I was actually going to take Liao, but go ahead. Explain.
I just think that It's almost like a broader point on the season. So I think we all acknowledge that in the first half of the season, Leao perhaps wasn't firing. He was being creative still. But when you make somebody your highest paid player towards the end of the season prior, you expect a certain level from them, and you expect the numbers that he accumulated previously to kick on and improve. In 2024, he's been outstanding, like without a doubt. He's been that creative force that we saw in the first half of the season, but he's adding more and more goals to his repertoire now. I think it was just one of those games where you look at him and you realise that the majority of defenders would struggle to deal with him. Maybe that's an obvious statement, but he was toying with them at times. I loved that run off the shoulder of the last man for his goal as well. That's almost like a centre-forwards run. Mm-hmm. And he took the goal well. Yeah, just Rafa for me.
Yeah, I mean, I thought he was just incredible. He was just flowing. Like, he was in that state where he was just like nothing could stop him. And you know, you love to see that. That was who I planned on picking after the game yesterday, but since you picked him, I'll go with Adley. 2 assists, great passes. He looked awesome. Sorry, Madison. I just
Maddie's having to change.
Well, I was stuck
as well.
Between two, so now I'll go with my other one. So
yeah.
Which is
Chukwueze. Created the most chances of the game, finally finding his feet. Showing his worth a little bit. Now he just needs to get some goals.
Yes, sir. Yeah. What else happened? Bologna dropped points. No, I mean, look, we're in the top four now. It's almost mathematical. We're getting towards the stage where we can literally secure a Champions League place. But Juventus beat Fiorentina 1-0 last night, so the gap to them remains 6 points. But yeah, Roma beat Lazio in the derby. And Atalanta lost away at Cagliari, so are in an even better position, you know. Again, it's a formality. Inter play Udinese tonight away, I believe. That's a ground they normally struggle at. But yeah, we're basically heading towards the position now where we need to avoid defeating a derby to postpone their celebrations. It's a bit of a shame that it's got to this point while we're on a run of 5 wins in a row in the league and 7 in all comps. But I'd rather have an end to the season in the league, at least, where you kind of know where you are, rather than last season where you're trying to balance the Champions League commitments with making sure you finish above the dotted line. And we didn't do that on points. You know, we took a penalty for Juve to drop them below. And yeah, I think it's looking more and more like those top three spots are probably going to be ironed out from now. And so we can move on to Roma. Oh no, shit, flop.
Oh, I was happy with not picking one.
Yeah, I would feel uncomfortable picking one, to be honest. I don't really think
easy. He scored a goal from Adley's Olympico. And he's fucking Giroud, man. Whenever there's no like flop, it's always Giroud.
Did anyone get booked? I can't remember anybody getting booked.
Chukwueze
got booked, right? Yep, he's the flop. no, I'm joking. Before we get a lot of angry comments, I don't think there was anybody.
I'll take all those.
I believe in our ratings and in the ratings of the papers, nobody got below a 6, which I think says it all. So it feels unjust to pick a flop. And thus we can move on to the Roma preview in the Europa League. Do we need to change the background? There we go. There it is. Rapid transition. So we previewed this tie at the time of the draw on the bonus pod. Go check that out if you haven't already. That was our initial reaction at the time. It would be fair to say that since then, both teams have been excellent. Obviously, we've won 7 in a row in all comps. They're on a good run under Daniele De Rossi, who is technically still the caretaker manager, but it's looking more and more like they are going to extend his deal. I think they've won like 6 out of 8.
They've won 2 in their last 5. They're
2 in the last 5? That don't feel right.
Yeah. They beat Lazio 1-0, drew 0-0 to Lecce, 1-0 to Sassuolo, lost to Brighton, draw to Fiorentina.
The Brighton one doesn't count. They were 4-0 up. But anyway, yeah. They've been better. They've been better than they were under Mourinho. However, we kind of argued at the time as well that with De Rossi in charge, they're a different proposition for us than Mourinho, who's a tournament manager, a cup competition manager, should I say. And they're probably a better opposition for us to face now in a bizarre way.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think it'll be easier. I know they started hot, as everyone does under a new manager. I mean, they're averaging one goal games now in the last four. Like, one game's a fluke, two games is whatever, but four consecutive games of 1-0 or 0-0, that's the opposite of fear. That is boring. Especially
you do that until like 3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
It didn't mean it was exciting then either. It was always boring. It's just I don't know.
Just because you win 1-0 does not mean that you're a bad team. It means that you can help control the game.
Scudetto winning season. We won a lot of games 1-0, but yeah.
Well, hey, let me cook. We haven't lost to this team since 2019. So, you know, there's that. I don't know what else needs to be said. I mean, we've done two reviews against this team already this season. We beat them both times. Like, it is what it is.
So, Roman are on fraud watch. Is that what you say?
Yeah, always have been, always will be. Yeah.
Always will be. So they beat Lazio in the derby on Saturday evening. Mm-hmm. You can't deny the lift that's going to give them going into this game, because we've seen it before where derbies have changed seasons. Remember, do you know what? There's some remarkable parallels happening between this run that Roma are having under De Rossi and what we did with Gattuso.
Nope.
A guy who comes in, a club legend, he manages to galvanize them. Not necessarily tactics, although I think De Rossi's tactics have been okay, but mostly just vibes, just vibing on a run. And we also beat Inter in the Coppa Italia under Gattuso in extra time. Cotrone scored a winner. I think it was extra time. And, you know, that gave us a spur. We went on a mad run after that. And Roma sort of starting from a position of being an absolute outsider for the Champions League spots and now sort of in the race, just as we started as an absolute outsider after a bad start to the season. And then we ended up missing out on top four on the final day of the season. So there are some parallels between what's happening there and what's happening here. Here's how Roma lined up for the game against Lazio. And you could tell me any problems you see with this lineup for us. Obviously, Svilar in goal. Celik and Angelino were the fullbacks. Llorente and Mancini the centre-backs. Mancini scored the winner. Cristante, Paredes, Pellegrini as the midfield three. Then Dybala, Lukaku, El Shaarawy is the front three.
Boring.
Boring team. Is that a boring team?
Yeah, Mancini's getting a red card in the second leg because Teo's not going to be there in the first leg. But if Teo was, you'd get a red card in the first leg.
Teo's there. It's Tomori who's suspended.
Oh, okay. Mancini's getting a red card first leg. He's getting one on Thursday. Congrats, guys. We won. yeah, he's going to get under his skin. He's going to cause problems. One of them's getting a red card. I don't know who. I think it'll be Mancini. Is this a first game home game or away?
First leg at home.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah, I think Leal is still in good form. Dybala, I mean, there's a chance he's going to break his leg on the way to the game still. Like, the dude's made of glass. Lukaku, you know, I had my moments with Lukaku this summer and early in the season, but I think that time's gone. Now that it feeds my agenda, he's not a good player. So that's it. That's
all. I don't think he's a great player. Like, he's good in certain teams. I don't think Roma is that team.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think he obviously did really well under Conte, and that's about it.
I can identify an obvious problem here, and it is Lukaku. Watching Brighton in that first leg, I know it's different level of team, different players, where at home versus at the Olympico, but watching what Lukaku did to Lewis Dunk in that first leg when they won 4-0, literally just backing into him and spinning him at every opportunity, found it really, really difficult to deal with him. I guess our comparable would be Gabia, somebody who is perhaps more known for their aerial prowess than being quick along the ground. The problem is we don't have Tomori either. So we are going to be playing either Chow, who has plantar fasciitis, so he might not even be available for the game, or Kier. If Lukaku's coming up against Gabia Kier, Not good.
Well, I could tell you what happened the last time he came up against Gabia Kier. He had 0.07 XG, and Kier and Gabia both had 7.8 ratings on FOTMOP. So,
okay, that's dude, so we're fine.
You're amazing. How do you know these things?
He literally just said the sauce as well.
No, I know. I was just joking.
Got it all up here, man.
Yeah, but right. then on the other side of things, I think we can cause real problems for them going forward. Celik and Angelino are probably predominantly wing-backs rather than full-backs. Llorente and Mancini are not blessed with a ton of pace, and I think they struggle in isolation. Mancini's been playing more on the left side, but if per chance he was to start on the right of their back four, I'd be getting Leao to run at him at every opportunity. Bit like sort of we targeted Romero in the Spurs game just because he's rash and he will dive in for one. Pellegrini's back to his best. He's a bit of a worry from midfield. He's the kind of player who can just pick up a ball and score a banger from anywhere. Paredes has been pretty good under De Rossi as well. And then Cristante, you know what you're getting with him. He's kind of the shield for the defence. Look, we've beaten them twice already this season. We're 13 points ahead in the league, I believe. We're at home in the first leg. The pressure's kind of on us here.
Yeah, kind of. I think if we continue with the same lineup we did, Pulisic as the 10 and Chukwueze on the right, I think we smoke them, dude. I really do. It might be 2-1. It might be 3-1, but I think we're going to be comfortable here. I don't think we're ever going to feel like we were in danger, even though I do think they'll get one goal on us.
I also don't necessarily... Go on, sorry, Maddie.
No, I'll say I don't think it's going to be as one-sided as AJ thinks. I think it'll be way harder.
I think it'll be tough. I think the fact that it's a domestic opponent who are who are on a good streak, and Roma's European record at the Olimpico is very good. I think it will be quite tough. And
didn't they make the final last year or the year before?
Yeah, last year on Lost to
City. Yeah, right. Like they know the tournament. They know how long it's going to take.
Okay, I
ten players.
Plus I think
who has seven goals in the tournament.
He has seven goals in the Europa League. Bloody hell, flat track bully.
Yeah, who have they played?
He scored against Brighton. I know that. They played Slavia in the group stages, didn't
Bro,
they?
We got knocked out of the Champions League, and you're boohooing them.
Yeah, they beat a Europa League caliber team from an objectively worse league.
I'd say Conference League, Brighton, personally, but.
Okay, regardless.
Yeah. Yeah.
AJ's that kid who like doesn't respect his opponent no matter who they are.
Yes. I've been called a sore loser, but what I will, and I don't know if that's true, but I will say I am a sore winner. So
I will say you're a fucking sore winner, that's for sure.
Yeah, 100%. I will rub it in every time.
I think if this game had been played a few weeks ago, I'd have said as well that like I'm not entirely sure that this De Rossi Roma team has a setting to come to San Siro and go for a draw, you know, to play for a 0-0 and then leave it in their hands. But in the last few weeks, their defensive record has been pretty good. Like they've not been conceding as many goals, probably at the expense of not scoring as many goals as well. But if it were Mourinho, I would say they'll definitely come and park the bus. They'll probably do it effectively and it would be a bit of a struggle for us. I still think we'll get a bit more joy. Tired legs might come into it. I think we've got a bit more to bring off the bench as well, especially if we revert to playing RLC as the 10, which I think we will do, given he rested the last game. I guess it's going to be Benacer Reinders in the double pivot, and then I think Pulisic will return to the right. I think Loftus-Cheek will play as the 10 again. As much as we might be tempted to play with that really attacking front four, I'm not sure this is the game to find out that it was only Lecce that we did it against last time, you know. And then Leao on the left, and it presumably is going to be Giroud up front. And then I guess we'll talk about the choices for Sassuolo, but that's it, isn't it? I guess Florenzi or Calabria at right back?
Calabria.
Yeah. Florenzi against his old team? Don't matter, does it?
Past it.
Prediction then?
3-1.
2-1.
2-1. Okay. We saw your mouth move, but I didn't hear anything.
Oh.
I'm going to say 2-1 as well. I think I think it'll be a better game than people are expecting to. First legs like this can sometimes be cagey and both teams fancy like just a shootout in the second leg. But yeah, I think we win. I also maintain that I would still be confident even if we drew this first leg. I still think we could go to the Olympico and win. I think over two legs, we will probably be okay, especially with Tomori coming back for the second leg and stuff like that. But should be a good night. Going to be a sellout. Tickets sold out really, really quickly. Get a few mil from the box office for it. And fingers crossed that we take a lead down at the Capital. And then we'll move on to Sassuolo. Or Assuolo, as they are this season.
Oh, shit. I thought I fucking wrote that.
Sassuolo going down this season, lads, do you think?
Yes. Oh, that'd be so nice. I'm so sick of this team.
Yeah. Same. They would have thrown our side for
so they're currently, they're second bottom. They've only won 6 out of 31 games in the league. They've lost 18, which is the second most in the league. 25 points from 31 games. They've scored 36, but they've let in 59. And they are they've got one win in their last 5, is what I can see. It might extend longer than that. It's just the form thing that I've got. But yeah, things just haven't clicked for them. Like Berardi's been scoring, Penamonti's been scoring. They've both got 9 goals, but just generally speaking, it seems that it's all caught up with them a bit because they're a team that always has quite a high amount of player turnover. For example, last season, I'm just reading, I think there's like 7 players left, and then they signed Bairami, Volpato, Pinamonti, Mulateri as part of the Fratesi deal. Castillejo, of course.
I didn't realize he's there, but that makes sense why they're going down.
Kumbula on loan from Roma, Cranio on loan from Monza. Like, looked at their summer and thought, oh yeah, at least be enough to keep them up. But it just hasn't worked. They had Dionisi in charge until the end of Feb. And then they had Bijica in charge as the caretaker for just one game, I think. And then Ballardini has come in as the new boss, the firefighter, to try and get them over the line. But yeah, they are currently 2 points from safety.
Yeah, I mean, they could bounce back with the win. Unfortunately, just looking at their last 7 games of the season here, I see 4 guaranteed losses. Mm. Us, Inter, Fiorentina, and Lazio, I just don't see them beating. Genoa, Cagliari, Lecce. I mean, they might be able to pull something off against those guys, but I think this might be curtains for them. Now, looking at the other teams, though, Frosinone might not do anything. I don't know if Verona's doing anything either. So, I don't know. They might just stay exactly as it is, the bottom 4.
Be good to get rid of a bogey team. I mean, I'm not. There's a week between the games. Our game's on the 14th, so Sunday. This game's on the 21st, but the game after they play us is Lecce at home, and that is the big 6-pointer. So I'm not saying that they're going to write off the game against us and focus on that, because as I said, there's a week between them, but it does feel like there's more on that than this, because as you said, they'll expect points from certain games and maybe not the one against us. Team G will rotate for this one, given that the second leg follows a few days later, and then the derby, and then Juve. Like, there's 3 big games coming up after this for us. So with 4,
it depends on how the Roma game goes.
Yeah,
I would do a little bit of rotation. Like, I'd give Chukwueze a start, maybe Okafor,
Jovic,
Musa. You know, but I wouldn't like. Calabria and Tail still start. Defense, like, we don't have a lot of depth there, so there's not a lot of rotation that we can do. Maybe do like Musa Adley or something.
Yeah, I think a lot of this one depends on how the Roma game goes. I think even how the Inter game goes this weekend as well against do we play before them?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I don't know. I'm looking at the head-to-head here, and we've lost at least one game to them every season since they got promoted, except for 2019, where it was 2 draws, 0-0 and 1-1. So the best record, obviously, as we all know. Even last season, they beat us 5-2 in that nasty January spell. So get rid of them as soon as you can. But something about this game, because we did beat them in the reverse, I do got a bit of a eek feeling to it. I think if Roma's not as comfortable win as I think, we might be resting some players here because they know that whatever it is, what it is. Inter's winning regardless. If we drop 3 points here, it's not the end of the world. And would you rather win or lose the Scudetto in the Derby or lose it the week before? So I'm not saying they're going to throw the game, but I think they might rotate a lot more for this one. And yeah, with that comes risks.
Destroy them.
I hope you're right.
I think that this is the kind of game that, this is famous last words, isn't it? But it's the kind of game that plays into our hands a little bit, because we're not playing a team that's in the mid-table. We're playing a team that is scrapping for points to stay alive in the survival fight.
They also play against us a lot.
Like, maybe. They
could just be, you know, we could fall into their, to all of their little traps that, that they want to play.
Yeah.
But they don't. Listen, but man, they can't pack. They can, and they probably shouldn't park the bus. You know, I don't think Sassuolo are ever a team that's come and park the bus. They need to try and score goals and obtain points, and therefore they should give us a bit, you know, at the other end. But who knows? I can see there being a lot of rotation for this game. And I agree with you, Maddie. I think if we've still got the momentum going, you want to be more selective and you want to fine tune it rather than complete turnover. But we know what Pioli's like. I can see there being 7 or 8 changes for this one, to be honest. And yeah, then we'll see what happens from there. It's hard to predict at the moment. You never know. It could be injuries or whatever between now and then. But I guess we do a prediction then. Looks like it's going to be mixed.
No, I'm still going to say win. I'm just going to say it's a 2-1.
Go 1-0. Even though I just said that we would destroy them.
Destroy them on the possession. 65%. I think we'll win 2-0. 2-0. So, yeah. Don't know. I've got a feeling. I've got a feeling that...
It's always hard to preview a second game because there's so much that could change, you know?
Yeah, it is. But again, I mean, it's one of those that on paper, if we are... It's not just like about what's at stake between now and the end of the season in the league, because the answer is very little, to be honest. It's about going into next season and how we're looking. You know, we've won 7 in a row. Could it be 8? And then if it were to be snapped by Sassuolo, a team in the bottom 3, you can't help but think the narrative's going to be one way, like, oh, Milan's struggling against the bottom-end teams again, even though we'd done so much in the month and a half prior. So I do think it's important that we win, obviously, and keep the momentum going. Listen to cues for the week. So I've taken a couple here from email and someone that we didn't get to in the comments section. Antonio Licandro asks, what do you guys think of the idea of Xerxes to Milan? He's not similar to Giroud, but he's experienced in Syria. But the asking price seems excessive. There was a report saying they wanted like 75 mil. And then for the midfield, he wants Kefren Turam or Thiago Alcantara, I believe that is at Liverpool, on a free. Basically, I guess we expand that to say, how do we complete the team?
You know, I've definitely said a lot of good things about Xerxes, and I've been pretty confident that that was our guy, but I don't know, the last few weeks, man, he just hasn't done it for me. I know he just came back from injury, but I'm starting to be less and less impressed by him. I didn't realize he's not even on double-digit goals yet. So, I don't know. That kind of worries me.
He's a better option.
Yeah.
Xerxes washed.
I don't know about wash. He's young still, but...
Fraud watch?
Fraud watch, definitely.
Yeah. Agreed. There's been a lot of talk about Xerxes in the past week. Most of it's been from Gazetta, and like 2 weeks prior to that, they were saying we're all in on Gyökeres and stuff. So I don't put too much faith in that. But the idea was that the operation would be like 50 mil, including Salama, because I think we know that we're going to be spending between like 40, 50 mil on this striker. People saying, no, Xerxes will be too much. He's already out of our price range. I don't know how a 9-goal season in the league could make you worth 75 million. You know, he's not an attacking midfielder. He is a number 9. We need to sign a new number 9. If we really believe that this is the guy for a 4-2-3-1, which is admittedly what Bologna play, if we really think that this is the guy, then we need to, you know, very carefully study why we believe it's the guy. Like, is he going to be bringing the wingers in so they can get more goals? Do we think that with better teammates, Xerxes can become a 20-goal scorer? It's a big gamble, is 40 to 50 mil. In the meantime, the like Jonathan David links have come up again because he's in good form. Not that anybody's ever seen him score. That guy in the comments kicked off big time about that. It's like, I watch Liga all the time. Good. Nobody else does.
League Uber One or something?
Uber Eats League. What's it changing to?
No, they changed it. It's McDonald's now.
Oh, that's so funny.
Gyökeres there wants to go.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Now, do you think he's just more muscly, or do you think he's like put a bit on?
Yeah, he put a bit on. I thought it was kind of jokes, but then I watched this last game when he almost gave away that goal, you know?
He was
hefty. I thought it was Calabria at first, then I was like, who the fuck is that? Like, he looked, well, plump. So, yeah, he needs to, Benacer. He just needs to, you know, take the offseason serious this summer, and I just don't know how he's gained weight during Ramadan. That doesn't add up to me. But you know.
On the subject of that, there was a really, really funny Republica headline yesterday, one of the newspapers in Italy, that said, like, Pioli can rejoice Ramadan is ending. I'm like, whoa! That's an incredible accusation. And then what it was all about is actually the players in our squad who are observing Muslims and did Ramadan and, like, I guess it'd be better for their condition, you know, that they can take on fuel and stuff during the day. But anyway, I just thought
that Sean Dyche played like five players who were observing Ramadan against Newcastle, and they looked like shit. And people are like, "What are you doing?" Like,
oh, they had a break as well. Like when at sunset, they had a break, so the players could take on. Yeah, that is, and then they came back and rescued the point.
I mean, I don't think it affects people as much as everyone assumes it does, to be honest, because they're still eating twice a day. They're just before the sun goes up and down. Like, it's they're still getting fuel. It's just the majority of the day that you're not. And honestly, intermittent fasting is good for you, anyways.
Depends on the country. It depends on the climate. Like,
yeah,
you know,
it also depends on what those what they're breaking their fast with. You know, if McDonald's. They're doing it with McDonald's, then it's not going to help you if that's your only fuel. But if you're having a real meal, then you're good.
Have like a new nutritionists were like, you want to eat this?
Yeah, exactly. And I see Benacer, so I don't know.
Salamat, because you want to eat chicken nuggets.
Don't tell Martino.
Brahim Diaz with his burger. Burger with mayo after a win. Now, what a way to celebrate. I mean, tinfoil as well. Like Five Guys. What was it? What was the other thing? Oh, yeah. Gyökeres, I think, is out of our price range. Dimazio mentioned Victor Boniface last night. We wanted him when he was at Saint-Gilloise in Belgium, and he's obviously exploded because Leverkusen are having a great season. I really like him, to be honest, but I don't know if he'll leave after a season where they win the league and his price has probably rocketed, that kind of thing. So I don't know. It's all up in the air. And as for the midfielder,
finding a player who statistically fits what we need, like doing this whole money ball thing, like it's worked this season. Knock on wood, right? So they're going to continue to like look for a striker who is like able to receive the ball from a cross and score, right?
That's why, because we hit on almost everything last summer, and there's a couple that the jury are out on, like Pellegrino. We don't know what he's going to become, but he looks a bit dodgy at the moment. And Terracciano, we'll see what happens with him. He arrived in January and he was low cost. That's why I just have faith almost in whoever they choose. And I think whoever we pick, because they're going to be so much younger and because like the style of centre forward has changed, I just feel like they're going to be more involved than what Giroud is at the moment. And that can only be a benefit to the other players around, you know. Don't know who the striker's going to be. It is going to be one of the most interesting storylines of the summer.
I have an idea on who it may be.
Is it Harry Kane?
No, it is not Harry Kane. Big Dusan Vlahovic.
No. All I think we say is Zapata. Dusan.
No.
Right. Yeah.
I take that.
I think Zapata's going to Torino on permanent. I think they activated it. But yeah, I don't know. I know they tried to offload Vlahovic last summer. I think he's still putting goals in left and right. He's second in the league. But for whatever reason, people seem to think he's fallen off one season wonder style, and yet he's consistently a top striker in the league. They tried to get rid of him last summer. His contract ends in 2026, so it'll have a year and a half left. I don't see why we couldn't, especially if something happens to Juve where they miss out again. You know, I know they're going to get Champions League at this point, but it's looking less and less likely as the season goes on. So if they miss it for whatever reason, they need to get some money back.
I think it's going to be a swap deal with Kamada based on a bogus report from Italian Football TV.
Less said you swap a player who you don't have a contract with. Pro contract. Yeah.
What the fuck?
He's under contract. Kamada's not an uncontract.
I think you said Kamada. I was like, bro, we didn't sign him.
No. Francesco Kamada. Basically, there was a tweet from Italian Football TV last week.
I saw that. Said,
yeah, it's like Kamada at Juve, and they referenced Sky, and it was a non-existent report. Like, it wasn't out there. Mm-hmm. There was nothing. They probably misread something, or
they probably saw a fake tweet and just assumed it was real.
And laughable. But yeah, that was a joke. Obviously, we're not swapping him. Balogun is on fraud watch. I'm just looking down Liga top scorers. He scored 7 goals this season. Elie Wahi's on fraud watch. He's on,
really?
He's on 7 goals this season. Wow. Gonçalo Ramos has been linked, and he's got 8 goals this season in 23 games. Not really what you need from your future number 9. I don't know, man. I don't even think... aside from Vlahovic, who would obviously be a good signing, I don't think there's anybody domestically really that we could go for who knows the league. As you say, Zapata's probably going permanent basis to Torino. You're looking down a list of players that we could realistically sign. You get to like Goodmanson of Genoa, who's not even really an actual striker. He's more of a 10, you know, and then there's a lot of wingers in there. And then you get to someone like Lorenzo Luca at Udinese, and he's only got 7 goals. So I think it's going to come from abroad, and we're going to have to make a big investment. Second question, Tommaso Trehu. You guys talk a lot about the manager and whether Pioli is the right guy to go to the next level. My understanding of football analytics is that managers matter very little. The factor that correlates most with success is the wage bill. Simone Inzaghi's not a better coach than Pioli. He's just got a team with higher wages and better players that are close to the peak of their career. Does wage bill equal success?
No.
I think it does.
Okay.
Not fucking Bundas.
You're wrong. Look at Everton. Their wage bill is huge and they fucking suck.
They're just badly run. Like it's how you spend the wages, of course. I just think you look at the way that Inter's... Or maybe we're isolating the example a little bit here, but you look at the way that Inter's squad has been assembled compared to ours. Mm-hmm. And he's right. It is how you spend it. They've got more players that are in their prime years. You know, therefore, you could argue they've got more reliable depth. They've been able to rotate a little bit better, that kind of thing. But I just think, generally speaking, like the wage bill is what tends to separate the clubs that are player trading a lot. So Atalanta and teams like that, they often have a lower wage bill because you've got players coming in and out, and they're swapping them about. But the only way for us to protect our core and build on our core is for our wage bill to go up. So the idea is that we keep all of our star players this summer and we bring in, probably having to renew Teo and Maignan in the process, by the way, on like double the wages that they currently get. Then you're bringing in big names that are starter level quality, your striker, potentially midfielder, potentially centre back. That wage bill is going to go up. And then all of a sudden you're thinking, right, we can rival Inter for the Scudetto because we've got a deeper squad. You know, we've got a squad with better players. I know we won the league with a low wage bill, so there is that counter argument. But there's some clubs who spend way too much on wages. They spend it badly. I just think that the phase that we're in right now, spending more on wages would probably be congruent with being more successful.
There's like a, I don't know the term. Was a geometry term, but like there's like a graph, right? Where like
bell curve.
There's players who, or there's teams like City and Liverpool and Arsenal, and you know, who can attract the right players, have a high wage bill, afford it, and win. There are teams that just are like, we will pay you whatever you want to come here and play, but then it's like Andre Gomes, mm-hmm. right? Or you know, I don't know, Castillejo.
Yeah,
he does not work.
No, I agree with Madison on this, and Ollie, I think you hit the nail on the head with your first point. Is it depends on how you spend it.
Yeah,
I don't think there is a direct and consistent correlation between higher wage bill, more success. I think it, like Madison said, you could, I mean, we could look at Sassuolo. You could triple all their wages if you agree to the terms. It doesn't make the players any better. Mm-hmm. Now, better players do have higher wage demands, of course, but, you know, I think there might be a small relation. Like, I think it definitely runs parallel, but I don't think they're overlap. I don't think there's a guarantee, because there are examples of Leicester City, Bayer Leverkusen, Girona, who obviously fell off, but there's examples of teams who have smaller wage bills that have had success without it. There's a lot more examples of teams with huge wage bills that have success because
exactly. I'm not saying it's a direct correlation, but the reason that the Leicester story and the Leverkusen story are getting so much airtime and they feel like so special is because they're not expected to do it. You know, they're not one of the established powerhouses. I know maybe I'm thinking about this as somebody who constantly hears figures related to the Premier League, but I've just looked up the wage bills from the Premier League. The top seven in order, and there is an outlier here. It's Man United, obviously. It's City, United, Arsenal, Liverpool, Villa, Spurs, Chelsea. And we know why Chelsea are in there.
Yeah.
That should be the top seven, you know? Chelsea have spent it badly. So there's your one that you take out, and then you put in the team that have spent it better. Who in this case, I don't know who even
is. Newcastle.
Yeah, maybe Newcastle. Or is it West Ham? If it's West Ham, they're eighth. So
West Ham seventh right now.
Oh yeah, so it's West Ham, and they're
the most confusing team.
They're eighth.
So relegation, and then they're in like seventh. Next season they'll be in the bottom five.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
it's an interesting argument, and yeah, I'm not saying that if you spend more, you will definitely be successful, because with spending more comes more risk. I just think that to the specific point about like how do we bridge that gap with Inter, and why has their squad and why has everything gone so much better for them this season and in the last like 18 months, maybe 2 years compared to us. I just think we're at that point now where we can't take as many gambles on the unproven. We need to start taking more gambles on the more economically straining things. And
I agree with that. I would be shocked if we don't see a club record signing this summer.
It has to be. It simply has to be, really. Mm-hmm. It's got to be the striker. Final question, and it can just be a really quick response. Khaled Abu Shanab asks, would you take Mauro Icardi over any of the strikers that Milan are linked with?
No. How old is he now?
I tell you, he is currently 31 years of age. His stats this season, he's at Galatasaray, for those of you who don't know. He was at PSG, then he went on loan to Galatasaray, and then he signed for them permanently. He got 18 goals in 27 league games with 8 assists. His overall tally, 25 goals, 11 assists in 40 games. So it's above a goal contribution per game. He has regained his scoring form, but with Icardi comes drama. We know
that. The part that I want the player, I don't want what comes with him.
Yeah, agreed. I think Icardi could be a really good complementary piece to the attack. I think Icardi could be the Giroud replacement, you know, somebody mm-hmm. who's been and done it and knows the league and that kind of thing. However, he should not be the guy that we invest in to be the number nine for the next 3-4 years. I just don't see the point in that. It's way too much of a gamble. But say the budget becomes available and you can sign like a Boniface and an Icardi, so you've got a bit more extra security, and renewing Jovic, of course. But I don't see that as being possible. I think his wages will be quite high as well and stuff like that. So it's an interesting name, and he has been linked. Yeah, that's it. Wrap it up there. Thank you to everybody for listening. And we will be back next week, of course, with a recap of the two games and a preview of the two games. It'll be a busy one next week. I've been your host, Ollie Fisher. Find me on Twitter at Ollie Fisher. AJ.
Thanks for listening.
You enjoy my talking more.
Thanks for listening, everyone. We will catch you next time.
Goal! Ancora Teo! È una meraviglia! Il gol di Teo Hernandez! Da un'area all'altra! È una meraviglia! Senti il mio cuore!